We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey, man.
Happy Friday, everybody. And thanks for listening to Atlanta's number one sports station, his number one sports show. We're going to find out what the Braves are going to do, but not immediately. We're going to talk about the potential options on the table for the Braves as they're set to start the second half of the season tonight against the Rangers. And what we're talking about is, what are the moves that this team's going to make to improve? Right now, Mike, we're 2.5 games up after the Mets beat the Phillies last night. They got back to work 4-1, and we kind of gave you the lineup. Grant's going to join us here in about 15 minutes from now to talk about the latest with the Braves, but it feels like there's a lot of stuff going on with our team right now, man.
Right. I mean, you're talking about the Bravos?
I mean,
it's just this team has got a lot of decisions to make, and based on what we're going to talk with Grant McCauley about, some of the specifics that the manager, Walt Weiss, talked about earlier, and one of those questions was, hey, sounds like, and Mark Bowman asked the question, sure sounds like to Mark that Strider's not going to pitch this year, and what about Schwellenbach? And it sounds like you're maybe going to see him if you're lucky. And Walt Weiss didn't exactly say no about that. So again, we'll talk to Grant about it, but you and I were debating how heavy should they invest in pitching. A lot of reports say they might be looking at an offensive piece. We're going with a very uncompelling 8-9, along with Austin Riley tonight, but it is going to be very interesting to see how Owen Murphy can step up. He's already had one appearance. This kid is high expectations, had his Tommy John a couple years ago, but we'll ask Grant about him. But this is where you're at. You're out with Chris Sale. You feel great. You can have an untested young man in Owen Murphy, and then you got Grant Holmes, and you know what the ceiling is with Grant. That's why I don't think you have enough pitching.
All right, we're going to see. I said to you yesterday, they may not be looking at this the way we are, and the reports out there from Ken Rosenthal is they're looking at potentially adding a bat or so. Look, that's been our issue. We're not hitting.
Right.
But the guys that are not hitting are also being paid a lot of money or they've been injured. So hopefully Acuna can come back, Kim can come back, and Riley can start hitting. And guys, that answers your questions. You got 17 days to figure this out.
And that's where it's at. Now, we've seen other teams. Brewers were the first team to look at some pitching. They made a move with the Astros. But, I mean, no one's going to just sit around on their hands while you're figuring out if you got enough power, you know, in your lineup or you got enough pitching to get you through to the finish line in October. But we'll talk to Grant about what the skipper had to say today and just what are we going to see this weekend against the Rangers.
All right. Seahawks rookies reported today. Can you believe that? Two training camp. Vets get a couple more days. 49ers rookies are going to report tomorrow. Our rookies next week this time will be at Flowery Branch. And then camp starts the following week. This is now, guys, literally right here at our front door. And, Mike, you brought up something pretty interesting earlier here on the show in regards to looking at different aspects of our defense, different, you know, position groups. We've been doing this a lot because there are some position groups that I have questions about. There are some players that I'm going, is he going to be able to step up and do what we need him to do? But I don't like where we're ranked in this. I just don't.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys out there that are big analytics guys, and there was a number that came out today, and it was Warren Sharp. And, it's not PFF, but he's a guy who's well-respected, and he's got over 400,000 followers. A lot of folks in the NFL follow this guy and see what he's talking about. He ranked the best front sevens to the worst front sevens. So whether you're in a 3-4 or a 4-3, where do you stack up? Well, some of the usual suspects you'd expect are up front, like the Broncos do a great job. You know, you've seen what the Eagles have got. We came in 31st out of 32 teams, and we had the second most sacks last year. So he doesn't believe in, and maybe some of this is the James Pierce Jr. waiting for the shoe to drop from the NFL. We are of the opinion he's going to start the season.
I do. Yes, I do believe that. Will he be punished? Yes, at some point, but I don't know what that punishment is going to look like. And then there's a chance he might not be. We'll see. But to lead or to be second in the league in sacks, the one thing we didn't do a great job of, and we got to be better at it this year, is stopping the run. But I don't think that's where we should be ranked in this, because the teams where you rank the Falcons are teams that are really bad.
Yeah, man, those are teams that are going through fire sale mode. Now, look, the Bears made the playoffs, but they gave up a lot of points. That's where they had a lot of shootouts. Caleb Williams had to pull some fireworks out of his tookus. But they've got the Cardinals, actually the Saints at 28, Cardinals, Bears, Falcons, and then the Dolphins. So that's a team that, you know, they've kind of gutted the defense, gutted the team with the exception of A-Chain at running back. But, yeah, you look at the top end of this, it's all the usual suspects. The teams with the best defense, D'Amico Ryans and his Texans, Eagles, Rams, Broncos, Seahawks. Seahawks just won the Super Bowl with that front seven. We don't have Caden Ellis. Maybe the James Pierce thing. You brought up a great point with the run stopping. Is this defensive tackles, the guys in the middle, going to keep those offensive linemen off those linebackers that don't include Caden Ellis?
Yeah, but let me say this about Caden Ellis, and I think, Mike, you might have been on vacation. Caden Ellis was a very good player on an average defense. He wasn't Ray Lewis. And so with all of that said, he made a lot of plays, no debating it. And look, we like the guy as a person. I think he was a very good player, and he's versatile. But I got to tell you, everything that he can do, Diablo can do. Everything that he can do, Divine Diablo can do. And as a matter of fact, we went on a five-game losing streak with Caden Ellis on the field and Divine Diablo not. So that's where I'm at with the replacing Caden Ellis. My question is, who's going to be next to Divine Diablo and picking up that
slack? Well, I mean, we're going to see if Jalen Walker or Christian Harris, who we picked up from the Texans, who's had high hopes coming out of college but has been a little underwhelming of late. That's why we got him for a one-year deal. I'm just telling you what the guy who runs the defense said. Ulbrich said back in February, replacing Caden Ellis, quote, would take more than one human being.
Two people.
So that's, and I don't know if Warren Sharp's hip to that, but it's a team that did have the second most sacks, but as Carl said, unfortunately, teams can still gash us with a run game.
Yeah, it's going to be, that whole
figuring. I hope Jalen Walker wins the job. I hope it's, with all due respect to Christian Harris, I hope Jalen Walker, but they're going to still use him like a Swiss Army knife all over the place.
I don't think he is in contention for that specific position. I could be wrong, but I think, Mike, they want to, to your point, use him in various ways and have him on the field doing a variety of things. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, guys. We are all over Falcons coverage when it comes to training camp and, of course, throughout the course of the season as well, talking about training camps getting underway, and ours will start again technically next week on the Rookies Report, but then the veterans, I don't think, report until that Tuesday, and then, Mike, right, that first day of camp is like the 29th for us.
We spend a lot of time on Penix and Tua, but that to me is the most compelling, argument, because Jalen Walker, you can walk him up to the line. You know, he's big enough, even though people thought he was undersized pre-draft, he's still 6'2", and you saw him do everything at Georgia. Or he can play the classic linebacker position. So as you said, you got Divine
Diablo
moving over to what Caden Ellis did, and Jalen Walker, that's a hell of a lot of athleticism at linebacker.
No, it is.
Combine that with what you got at safety? That's impressive.
Well,
if he can do the job.
The thing is, with Walker and Pierce and Divine, like, the thing is, what are you up front? That's where the question marks are. Right. That's why I think if you're going to take a jump, and we don't need to be the number one defense, but you got to be top 10. If you're talking about making a real run, that's what we're talking about, guys. You got to be top 12 in the league. You can't be, 20, 24, 25.
The only team that wasn't, because their offense was so dynamic, was the Bears.
Yeah.
And they also got a lot of turnovers, too. They were,
turned people over. But that's what we did our Super Bowl year. We turned people over.
And the Saints did it the year they won it. So, not a great elite defense, but they turned guys over.
I think that's a big part of it. All right, speaking of how many days do we have? 13 days until camp starts?
All right, you're going to trigger somebody with
this? I'm not doing a damn thing.
Come on! It's Dukes and Bell's Falcons Camp Countdown. 13 days until the battle of QB starts. But is it really a battle? I'm starting to believe. Never mind.
Wow. See, this is why people think you're Mr. Voice. This is why people say you're feeding this information. You're feeding the scripts to Mr. Voice.
That sounded an awful, the thing that you say all the time.
Well, people repeat things I say on this show all the time. That's a catchy phrase. You want to say it with me? T-U-A.
I'm not prepared to say that. No one's a bigger Michael Penix Jr. fan on the show than this guy. And
that
I'm ready.
That is a complete lie.
That's total. No, the best thing for the franchise is for this guy to win, grab the brass ring, take over the quarterback job. We save money because he's on his rookie deal. Yes, please, whoever that idiot is in the background, this is what we need.
I've had people stop me in the streets literally and go, T-U. He listens to the show. That is not me, guys. By the way.
Come on. It's Dukes and Bell's Falcons Camp Countdown. 13 days until the battle of QB starts.
Yeah.
But is it really a battle? I'm starting to believe.
This is right. You could have said that yourself. You've said that yourself.
And that's what proves he listens to the program. It's a big show, Mike. We get big numbers.
The guys, the joyless, humorless guys who follow us on YouTube, and I don't know what these guys do for a living, but thanks for watching. But these guys, they don't get the joke, Carl.
Look, he wrong?
It's Dukes and Bell's Falcons Camp Countdown.
Is he wrong?
13 days until the battle of QB starts. But is it really a battle? I'm starting to believe. Never mind.
You've been saying this for months.
They got guys who think, literally, we're going to wrap up the show up there at Flowery Branch, and Michael Penix Jr. is going to run us over in the parking lot with his car over this. Look, he's a big boy. He's heard this before. He's got to go win the job, man.
It's a competition.
That's it. And by the way.
Is it really, though?
Let me just say this for the second time this week, because again, we like to think that 99.9% of our audience, which makes us number one in afternoon drive, get the joke. But there's always those guys, Carl, they're just, they don't really seem to get the joke. Whatever we say in the next 12 days
after today.
It has no bearing. This job will either be won or lost by Michael Penix Jr. being healthy and
ready to go. On the field.
That's it. We're having some fun. We're pulling your chain.
Well,
He makes a valid point.
It's Dukes and Bell's Falcons Camp Countdown. 13 days until the battle of QB starts. But is it really a battle?
Yes,
I'm starting to believe. Never mind.
All right, you know what? He's going to have the high ground. But again, if Penix in these next... Michael, if you're listening, please, for the love of God, be sleeping in a hyperbaric chamber. Be doing all these things you need to do.
He's got the lasers, Mike. Yeah, he's got the heat, all that stuff.
The stimulation on the left knee and everything else. And be ready to rock and roll. So we have a real competition. Because nothing's going to be worse than we start the first 2 weeks of camp when they're in pads and everything's going. And we're saying...
Don't be looking at me, by the way.
Michael Penix Jr. is not a full participant. But again, only time will tell. Only time will tell.
Don't look at me.
Mr. Voice is being clairvoyant. He's making it sound like it's a done deal. A fait accompli, as they say in Latin.
Can he be trusted?
It's a fair question. 404-726-0929.
Why don't you just put it on a shirt? T-U-A. Make some money off this for us.
Once he wins the job. All right, we're coming back. When we do, we got to talk to Grant McCauley, guys, about the Braves. Lots of news to report as they get back to it, including where's Acuna, where's Kim, and how soon is it before they get back up to the bigs?
I'm Mike, and I'm for Mike.
Thank you.
Whatever.
All right, he's back. They're back. Hope you got a tan, man. How you doing? How you feeling, Grant?
Doing very well. Enjoyed a little break, but as you mentioned, and as I'm sure you guys have been talking about, it is time for the Braves to get back to business, which means it's time for me to get back to business.
So let's talk about a couple of things. First and foremost, the return of potentially Ronald Acuna. Is there a timetable? What are you hearing? What's being said?
No exact timetable, but I would be led to believe by the comments that Walt Weiss made to us before the game that it does not sound like this weekend could occur at some point during the four games against the Padres, but he said multiple times that they have a timetable set out for him. They don't know he, being Walt, does not know the exact specifics of everything about that timetable. Some of it depends on how Ronald feels. So if he does well, he advances to this. They continue on. If there's no setbacks, then obviously that's your best case scenario. And you could have him back sooner than later. But it sounded like to me, reading the tea leaves, that it would be more likely to happen on the team's upcoming road trip than it would be on this homestand. Though Walt did say when pressed, I wouldn't rule out seeing Acuna on this homestand.
Great to hear. I know that a couple reporters in the scrum were asking him about the future of the pitching staff, because Carl was saying maybe they just believe guys will come back and find that traction within the next 17 days. You don't have to be as aggressive looking for pitchers. But it sounds like he's lukewarm when it comes to Strider's return and maybe Schwellenbach.
Yeah, so that's the thing about this, and I know this is kind of the bigger discussion point, is what are the Braves going to do with the trade deadline? And I was listening to you guys yesterday, and I saw the post go up on social, and I said, look, I mean, I don't see any way around wanting to or needing to, I should say, add starting pitching before the trade deadline. How many and what quality and what guys? Those are the questions we're going to be asking and finding out as we go along. But I don't really factor Spencer Strider into this season just because of what he went through already this year and the fact that he's going to be shut down for a significant amount of time and is not close to picking up a baseball, and we are moving towards August. So you just start doing the math. It just doesn't feel like there's a good window of time to allow him to get up to the level that you would need him to be to make an impact this season. Now, Schwellenbach, I'm a little bit different on, because we haven't heard anything other than he should be progressing towards a trip down to Florida to begin throwing and building up. But again, the timetable and the window of what's left this season leads you to wonder about how effective he can be, because how much time does he have? And then you kind of have to bring it all back to, at least with those two guys, what is a realistic expectation of what you can ask of guys who have missed significant time down the stretch versus going out and trying to find veteran proven reinforcements that can help your rotation, which desperately needs guys to cover innings. I've looked at this and I talked about this a little bit this morning with the morning shift crew. 4 2/3 innings is what the Braves starting rotation is averaging per start since June the 1st. That's the fourth lowest in baseball.
Wow.
That's simply an untenable thing moving forward. The bullpen cannot continue to cover that many innings day after day after day after day, especially without Robert Suarez right now. It has just become a very difficult situation, which leads us all back to the trade deadline. What right. can the Braves, what can Alex Anthopoulos do to fortify a pitching staff for a club that's sitting in first place? You cannot send that message to the clubhouse that, hey, we just didn't find anything out there. The season's not worth investing in. There's no help coming.
It's a great point. It's Grant McCauley joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So with that said, here's the other side of that argument. If we fix the offense, doesn't that help the pitching? See, I think, Grant, there are a lot of folks who think, like, when you're throwing Grant out there or any of these guys, that they have to be perfect. Part of this is we hadn't scored runs like we were at the beginning of the season, and certainly with the injuries. So if that is somehow coming into play here and Riley gets going and Acuna's back and Kim can help, I've said to Mike, doesn't that help the pitching, or it still doesn't matter in your view? You still need to do this.
It can be part of the solution. And look, we know they've got to start scoring runs, and they have in the month of July shown some signs where, to your point, if you bring back Ronald Acuna Jr., which we anticipate being sooner than later, you still, I mean, I don't have the answers for it, but you'd have to hope and believe that Austin Riley can do something. And then what if they can find somebody on the trade deadline that helps them either solve and maybe an outfield bat that lets you DH Ronald some more, or somebody that can help you in the DH spot, which unfortunately has become another spot where Atlanta's not getting enough production right now. It can be part of the answer. But as I just laid out to you, and this is really where I come and the rubber meets the road for me as far as the trade deadline is, you've got to get more innings from your rotation. And then if you get to the playoffs, who are you starting besides Chris Sale? You have no answers for that. And that's not a knock on anybody that's doing their absolute best to try to, you know, go out there and compete on a regular basis. But the expectation of a club to go through the postseason is we've got the guys in the arms that will get us through there. I know that we can bring up the 2021 season and a lot of the things around it and how magical many of the things were. And the trade deadline was part of that. But in 22 and in 23 and in 24, the Braves got to the postseason and didn't have enough starting pitching. And that cost them dearly, even if the offense is part of that equation. There's no two ways about that. You got to hit and you got to keep the other guys from scoring runs. And the Braves right now need a little bit of help in both categories. But I would say health-wise, the starting rotation has become the number one concern.
That's it. I mean, I like what you tweeted out, Grant. I retweeted it earlier as Grant McCauley joins us, guys, brought to you by Mark Spain, is, you know, sometimes a trade energizes a clubhouse. It doesn't have to be the big over-the-top move. I mean, believe me, I wish the Braves management would allow Alex to, you know, spend like a drunken
sailor.
And
that's part of it, sure.
But that, we saw, I mean, I know that Jock Peterson, it was he was just what the doctor ordered. You know, obviously Rosario eventually got on the field. He was injured at the time of the trade, and we didn't know Soler from a hole in the wall. But Jock Peterson was like an energizing force, it felt like, in 21.
Yeah, and those guys all added up to a lot for the Braves, and they caught lightning in a bottle multiple times. And that's not a realistic expectation of, hey, just go take a bunch of flyers and they'll all turn into stars and be MVPs of different postseason series. That would be beautiful. That's what makes that a special year. But kind of what I get to with this is just the overall, you know, need for this club to have, you know, the buy-in, if you will, from the front office, in which I believe Alex will try to go out there and find some pieces, but it will be a different kind of disappointing than what we heard last year, which I wasn't really upset with the Braves not trading Raisel Iglesias or not trading Marcell Ozuna, and they ended up bringing Iglesias back, and that was all fine, but last year was a lost year. If he's willing to go out there and do all of that work in 2021 for a season that many people look like and said was lost as soon as you lost your best player in Ronald Acuna Jr. in July, and something great can happen, why would he not say, all right, well, we've got to find some pieces and do some things to help this club that came into the second half in first place and with considerable talent on this roster already, and the possibility of getting Ronald Acuna Jr. back, Sean Murphy back at some point, and some other pieces that you could get at the trade deadline that would augment and strengthen a club that is a contender. In 2021, there was a question about the Braves' ability to contend in that division, and it just kind of worked itself out. But here in 2026, they're sitting in first place, so you owe it to yourself to keep it that way and to do the things you can to get a chance to get into the postseason, because I hate to be the reminder of this, but it's my sport and my business.
Yeah.
We don't know what 2027 is going to look like, if there is a 2027 to speak of.
Yeah, that's been the other part of this conversation. I'm all in now. I do not care about next year. And, you know, if that's the situation, we do not know if we'll be here in the sitting in first place next year after the All-Star break. Grant McCauley joining us, guys. As we talk about Austin Riley, I know you've been out. Are you hearing what he might have done during this break, this little getaway? Did he completely chill? I don't know, Grant. Are you hearing anything?
No, and I didn't really, you know, ask him anything about it today. I saw him briefly, but it just kind of felt like, let's see what happens after the All-Star break, because hopefully it was at least a mental and physical break for him, because I know he's been doing the work. That's not a question about, has he been in the cage? Has he been talking with people? Has he been working on things? Maybe it's as simple as needing to uncomplicate some stuff for him, to take a step back from it, to not have the game to be preoccupied by for a few days. Could just be that nice mental break. And I think a lot of people, at least from the crowdsourcing I'm able to do on social media, wanted to see Austin Riley get a break, and he got a break. So what's the second half going to look like? Is he going to be able to maybe just find some consistency, work his way in here, and start being part of the solution offensively? That would be wonderful. But this has obviously been the most challenging stretch of his career since the second half of his rookie season, and this is a guy that's done a lot since 2019, and the Braves need him to do a lot for the rest of the season and beyond.
Right, with him and Kim, you know, $40 million invested on the left side of the infield, you're just not getting that return. Meanwhile, no. And Grant, I know you've seen Owen Murphy pitch. What's he about? I missed his first start on vacay, but what do you expect from him against the Rangers this weekend?
Yeah, I'm interested to see. You know, it's just one of those things where this is a promotion that's built on two things: talent, arm talent, and necessity, because the Braves simply need guys to step into the rotation. And they're trying to do some things, I think, that are kind of reminiscent of what we saw with Hurston Waldrop last year. That was a necessity call-up. They caught lightning in a bottle, to use that phrase again. And he was terrific for him down the stretch. Can they get something like that out of Richie or Owen Murphy or somebody that can step into the rotation and help you out from the minor leagues? Maybe. We'll see. But there's too many maybes, I think, in the equation for the Braves rotation now to make you comfortable about what exactly is going on with respect to the deadline. But could Murphy show the Braves a little something and help them out in the short term over the next 17 days, of which they will play 17 games leading up to the deadline? You'd love to see it, and hopefully he'll be able to pass that test against the Rangers on Saturday in his first big league start. He's only pitched the one time. Right. It was in relief. Not exactly the greatest, I think, scenario to throw a rookie pitcher into, but sometimes, again, it comes down to necessity, and the Braves have been using that word, I feel like, a lot, at least I have, around the Braves pitching staff here over the last month or so.
Hey, real quick, we didn't get to catch up with you earlier in the week. What'd you think of the All-Star weekend? I mean, I know I was a little disappointed the Home Run Derby was on Netflix, and good pitching beats good hitting, but what'd you think about what happened up in Philly?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the game was an all-time classic. It was kind of over after the first few runs were scored in the top of the first inning against Christopher Sanchez. I saw the Philly fans were blaming Drake Baldwin for that, so that was fun.
Of course, Philly fans were
certainly vocal during the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby, for that matter. Yeah. But I love the reformatted Home Run Derby. I thought the Jordan Walker win was awesome. I thought all the guys that competed, it was a lot of fun. I thought whoever directed that game or that broadcast for Netflix had never directed a baseball broadcast before, because that was abysmal. Yes. Hopefully they sort that out. But otherwise, you know, it was a much-needed change for the Derby itself. For the event itself, you know, all jokes aside, I think that was a good change. I know it didn't get good viewership, and Netflix is something that not everybody's sold on, but they're going to be getting more and more and more, it seems like, moving forward. It was at least an improvement on the Derby, and you didn't have to watch guys just swinging and swinging and swinging and swinging against the clock and just not be able to enjoy it and, you know, just run the risk of somebody getting hurt at some point.
Great stuff. Grant, when are you on this weekend?
I'll be on this weekend, Sunday. We're going to do the late shift. We're going to do 9 to 11. Braves will close out their series with the Rangers. I'll be wrapping up the draft, so a very big week for the Braves beyond the All-Star game itself. They drafted a new crop, had a very, very interesting draft strategy. We'll get into all of that. And, of course, be sizing up the trade deadline, because it'll be here before you know it. That's From the Diamond, Sunday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, on the Odyssey app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Grant McCauley. A lot of questions, guys. All of this will get answered in due time. All right, in due time.
17 days before the trade deadline. So, but again, we don't operate in a vacuum. Other teams will be making some moves.
All right, Mike, we got a bunch of stuff going on. Two guys literally did something that we haven't seen today, and it's being overshadowed by a judgment, a ruling today that has a lot of people scratching their heads.
Did he cheat?
I don't think so. But that's me. We'll tell you about this when we come back. Also, Atlanta United in action tonight against Nashville. 7 o'clock pregame, 8 o'clock kick, as Mike Conte and Jason Longshore are there bringing you all of the action. Yes, they are back at it before the end of the World Cup. And speaking of the World Cup, What's going to happen this weekend? Stukes and Bell. It is Zooks and Bell. We have an update on the Open Championship, and it was a crazy day because it saw two guys, shoot 62 course records, guys. They tied the course record, and it's really not the story. And, look, I don't know if that matters for Lucas Herbert or for Sam Burns, but Bryson DeChambeau is the story. We're going to tell you about that in a second. But, Mike, with the World Cup final on Sunday, I think, again, nobody, you can't predict the weather, guys. You certainly can't predict wildfires, and that's what's going on up in Canada. And this is blowing that air, and we see it in the Northeast.
Right.
And now this has FIFA and a lot of people concerned.
Well, the news is, according to the weatherman, and we're not weathermen, we just read what they say, but it seems like they're expecting the rain to come in Saturday and to basically flush it out, to clear out the atmosphere in the tri-state area, which, like Chicago, they had to cancel an MLS match last night, up to New York, where it's just been hazy and nasty, I guess. According to the New York Post, Spain is practicing in North Jersey. So Spain is up there in this.
Yes.
Argentina is here. Yeah, Argentina stayed. I think they were practicing at Atlanta United.
Okay. At the facility?
That's what I read. So, yeah. So Argentina has stayed with, again, much better air quality than right here, where, again, there were warnings and everything up in New York. So I don't know if the Spanish coach said, let's take it inside, boys, if they have an inside facility or whatever. But in case you're wondering, I mean, not like these guys aren't the greatest athletes as far as the shape they're in. They're going to be like, you know, walking around like with smoker's cough coming up on Sunday. But they're saying the storms and the rain are going to flush it out. They're saying should be lower temperatures and clear conditions on Sunday at 3 for the World Cup championship,
all right,
for the
final. Look, air quality matters. And, you know, again, let's hope so, because I don't want anything to take away from what we think is going to be a great final.
Well, again, those that like to worry about these things, and I understand the concern is legit. Imagine if it looked like, you know, an apocalyptic scene. You know, it's an orange sky out there, and it looks weird. It was a bizarro world. Everyone's like, why don't you just play the final in L.A.? Everybody agrees. SoFi, look, we love Mercedes-Benz, and it got high marks all, you know, World Cup long. But if you're looking for a little bit bigger capacity, either Jerry World or for the SoFi Stadium, if not us. Now, the problem is you can't move fans. You know, they spent millions and millions of dollars in tickets for the 82,000 seats than they put into a smaller venue. You could go to a bigger venue, you could argue, but that doesn't seem to even be in the consideration. They're just expecting to catch a break from Mother Nature.
All right. And who
but it never made any sense. Because, guys, MetLife sucks. You talk to anybody. Jets fans, Giants fans will tell you. Just Google MetLife sucks and see what comes up. It was antiquated when it was built. There's nothing compelling about it. I mean, we've got a 10 times better stadium than what we've got here in Atlanta.
I don't disagree. And maybe as they move forward, that will, if when we get it back years from now, but that'll be part of it, Mike. The final needs to be inside. It needs to be, or at least a stadium that's covered or has the ability to be covered. Meanwhile, guys, Open Championship, real quick, Mike. Let's talk about the leaderboard and then the big controversy. Because Bryson DeChambeau was docked two shots today on the fifth hole. Now, this happened after he completed his round, which is part of the discussion as to, wait a minute, don't they have folks out there making these rulings? And Royal and Ancient, that's R&A, you'll hear a lot of that, assessed a two-stroke penalty. Bryson did not speak to the media, even though R&A did, and they made a statement, put a statement out there. But this took away, I think, from an excellent round, and we said this. Now you look at where he starts going into tomorrow. He was 7-under. He was one back of the leader, and now, Mike, you know, you're talking about being three strokes off the lead. In this course, we don't know what the weather's going to look like. It's been great the last 2 days, but this is the big controversy.
Yeah, man, Lucas Herbert, who plays for the LIV Golf Tour, his best golf as far as major golf was about 4 years ago as far as his best finishes in 2022. But this guy tied the record with a 62, as you mentioned, along with American Sam Burns today. That's how good the conditions were. So a guy you're not that familiar with, an 8-under. He's from down under. And Jackson Suber, give the guy credit. We said, is this guy going to fade? He had a top 5 finish at the Byron Nelson earlier this year on the PGA. That's his high water mark. He's never won a tournament, let alone a major, but Jackson Suber just two shots back. He would have been in third place because Bryson DeChambeau finished at 7-under before they went to the videotape and they looked at it. And now the argument is that he trampled the grass around his ball for an unfair advantage. And again, you guys know it. Nobody loves to narc out people like old, angry golf fans, whether or not that's the case or just simply other players can. I will say this. If you were playing behind DeChambeau, I think there's only a couple groups behind him, it's a 15 to 20-minute delay while this thing got sorted out as he was going round and round with the rules official.
So, yeah, and I watched this live. It didn't feel that way. I thought the ruling came fairly quickly. But after his round was over, he went back out with the rules officials, Mike, and I think that's what we were watching in studio, where they went back out to take a closer look and examine what was going on. Here's the interesting thing, and now you talk about drama. So DeChambeau didn't talk to the media. He went to the range. He hit balls. But his agent was asked if he's going to play in the third round. We'll see.
What? Oh, give me a – he's going to take his golf ball and go home? Oren, you told me that somebody reported he was doing YouTube videos out there in the dusk?
Yeah, so he was out there on the range, and then somebody had like a little camera stick, and they were just kind of filming him shooting. He offered the reporters that were standing around almonds and beef sticks.
He did. He did.
Yeah, just so it was sort of a very surreal scene with him just asking people what do they think of his swing. So it just
look,
it's
I mean,
almost sort of disbelief that it happened.
It's happened before. Dustin Johnson, you know, he didn't lose his cool when he got the grounding the club on a patch of dirt that they said was a trap. Remember that was at Whistling Straits years
ago. Yeah.
It's part of the game. Tiger got docked. He went in the water in 15 and he went back and somebody narked him out on TV and they penalized him. So I mean DeChambeau, I'd love to see him back on the PGA Tour. I'm not gonna argue about Liv. He got his money. But come on, this is ridiculous. I can't wait to. The Brandel Chamblees of the world are going to have a conniption over this tonight on the Golf Channel. So DeChambeau now falls down to tie for fifth. Other big names you'd recognize, you got Scottie Scheffler tied for eighth. And he's only, four strokes back at four under. Tommy Fleetwood had a 67 today. He's four under. John Rahm is in the mix, Carl, at four under.
Big names, man.
Bunch of guys ahead of him, you know, who haven't been there before. So expect them. They call Saturday moving day for a reason. Another guy had a tough one. It was a bogey. I think it was like a 3-putt or 4-putt for Jordan Spieth today.
He did.
At 10. So, man, I just feel for that guy. The cut today, in case you're wondering, is one over. So guys that are going home, Cameron Smith, that's the Australian. Any other big names? Billy Horschel, nobody that important that you'd be following, but all the big names are still alive. Wyndham Clark didn't make
Billy
the cut.
Billy Horschel's brother wants to talk to you.
Maverick McNealy. Didn't make the cut. Matt Fitzpatrick didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Former U.S. Open winner.
Sure enough.
So there you go.
It'll be intriguing to see what plays out over the weekend. Look, do I expect him to play? Yes. But that's where the frustration level is. And by the way, imagine it's dark. DeChambeau's the only one on the range. That's what this was.
I mean, I can't imagine DeChambeau. You're three strokes back on Friday. Going into Saturday, you've obviously got command of this course. You're not going swinging for the fences like it's a long drive championship. You know, save for that one, you know, obviously misguided tee shot. Be a grown up. Don't. That's the problem with DeChambeau. He's like Phil Mickelson on steroids in the sense of Phil's idiosyncrasies and crazy stuff, and only Phil would hit into a stupid spot that only Phil could get out of. I mean, I like DeChambeau, but don't be that guy.
Here's the thing, though. This is where I defend him because, again, I was watching it live. When the ruling comes down and they are over there talking with you, nobody was
– you feel you're okay. You're good.
Nobody's saying, hey, you stepped back and you trampled the grass to give yourself a better chance to get out of this situation. That's the part where I'm like – and that's probably what ticked him off. But either way, we'll see. And right now, to be quite honest with you, this is what Mike said. It's anybody's tournament. This thing's wide open heading into the weekend.
You got a couple of guys on the top of the leaderboard that never been there before.
Nope.
So you lost two strokes. It sucks. Get back and you think you're the first guy this ever happened to? Come on.
We'll see how it plays out. Hey, Chris Turtle Thomas has got you covered for the next hour. And then Abe's coming in. Atlanta United at Nashville tonight. 7 o'clock pregame, 8 o'clock kick. And, of course, Mike Conti and Jason Longshore will have all of that action for you as they get back to action. We are back on Monday. Yes. And guess what happens next week? Our rookies report to Flowery Branch.
Mm.
It is almost time for us to get ready for training.
It's Dukes and Bell's Falcons Camp Countdown. 13 days until the battle of QB starts. But is it really a battle? I'm starting to believe never mind.
Again, you're influencing Mr. Voice.
I've influenced a lot of people, Mike.
You know what?
It's what happens.
I'm saying is my name is Mike, and Mike is my quarterback. Thank you. I approve that message.
Let's get out of here and clear our throat. Hey, thanks to all of our guests today. They're online at odyssey.com. Big O, thanks for keeping us on point. Day-Day was off today, and appreciate you guys being here. As always, man, have a great weekend. Be safe, and join us on Monday starting at 2. Stay tuned. Turtles got you until 7, and then again, Atlanta United action tonight in Nashville. All right, Mike, let's get out of here, man. Clear your throat.
Hey, man, a lady named Piper Hutchinson, who covers LSU politics and sports in the big state of Louisiana, says that the head coach Lane Kiffin apparently took his family to Boca using his private airplane travel benefits at a cost of $40,000 to LSU donors, according to LSU Board of Supervisors documents, which is becoming a bit of a kerfuffle in Louisiana because, obviously, they're already spending money to buy out coaches and don't really spend a lot of money on school books for kids. But, hey, Lane's going to lane, right?
Sophie Cuttingham's her teammate. I really like Sophie.
Who doesn't?
She is the teammate of Caitlin Clark, and she says Caitlin is being targeted around the league by other players. Adam Silver said she's a political ping pong. Okay, look, I think Adam Silver stepped in, even though he wouldn't admit it, with the suspension of Alyssa Thomas, who basically had her hand on the neck of Caitlin Clark. I think he stepped in because the initial ruling was not a suspension. But at the end of the day, let's just keep it 100. It's basketball, all right? It's basketball. Sometimes there'll be fouls. Sometimes there'll be hard fouls. Sometimes you need to retaliate. All this stuff is getting out of hand. It's absolutely ridiculous to think that now, Mike, you have Congress saying, hey, we might need to look into this. Are you serious right now?
He's the commissioner of the NBA, not the WNBA.
Hey, man, if you love the show.
You tell your friend.
If you don't.
You're the guy with the gastrointestinal issues who blew up the bathroom today at Colony Square.